Hello, it's Kathy Love here. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. So no big surprise at all, I like to talk a lot. And now I can share some of the incredible people who crossed my path and the interesting conversations that we have. The Private Practice Secrets podcast is all about harnessing and sharing this collective business know-how, the experience, and the wisdom. My guests are amazing. They're bold, they're brave, and they're honest. There are laughs, and surprisingly, there's often talk of wine. We think you're really going to enjoy these unplugged private practice chats. So come on in, pull up a chair, let's get the conversation started. Hello, Megan Ingram. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
This isn't unusual for us to be Skyping and chatting and talking about business and kind of social media and stuff, is it? But it's a bit different to be recording it.
It is a bit different to be recording it, but definitely on topics we like to talk about.
Indeed. And fair to say that this will probably be a theme in all of my conversations. There's usually a plate of food between us when we chat, and that usually fuels our giggles and our conversations. So we're going to have to manage and pretend, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, today.
So I'm absolutely delighted that you can kind of share up some of your private practice wisdom. And you've got a whole lot of other wisdom that I'm going to kind of be digging for as well. But what I know about your early work experience is you were an early bird in working with the education department. And many, many listeners, I guess, have had that experience and have enjoyed and unenjoyed parts of it. But I'd love to hear about your early days, because you had quite a interesting job in setting up that unit. Is that right?
Yeah, so most of my career has been around or kind of nearby Department of Education. And I was presented with a really unique opportunity back in 2000, showing my age there, that a school where in the district that I worked in was wanting to employ a speech pathologist full time. And they had a high percentage of severe language. So it was back in the days where severe language was highly funded. And they wanted to do something different and something quite unique with their funding money, and something that was going to have a really big impact, not just on the kids that were funded, but across the school. So I was employed full time to work in the school. And it was a really exciting time because it gave me, there was nothing like that around. There was, we were kind of almost like breaking new ground. So it gave me the opportunities to work on a whole range of different service delivery models. And I spent half of my time in the classroom teaching with teachers. So we got to trial a lot of different things. And I guess that experience for me professionally has kind of, you know, really pushed what my private practice does now and what we do now, even though it's kind of evolved in different ways in each school that we work in. So
yeah, I mean, one of the, we've talked a lot about therapy in schools, and we're often looking at policy, and I know we're both really watching the changes in funding, and we've shared a little glass of something strong over the Gonski debate and
yes,
the Gonski outcomes, and that's something that we both, you know, share information about. And when did we do our therapy in schools? We did one in 2016 and one in 2015?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So in preparing that one-day workshop, this is a bit of a plug, I guess, isn't it?
It is.
In preparing that workshop, we spent hours and hours and days poring over what schools were trying to do. And it's not really for us to comment or critique, but really to, you know, to support what schools are getting done. And schools are getting it done really differently, in really different ways. And I think allied health needs to still learn to fit in and snuggle with schools and with individual schools. And you guys at Peninsula Speech Pathology Services were one of the early guys that I heard about that actually had agreements with schools, and it wasn't so much a per child basis. You were kind of going in and consulting on half day, full day terms, which was very, very cool, because it was a while back, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, even to this day, we actually have very different agreements with all of our schools that we work in. So the school, some schools buy us for a day kind of thing, and then we work on their priorities, and their priorities can work from individual kids to running groups to working in classrooms. So it really is through discussion with the individual schools as to how and what works really well with their programs. We've been really lucky with our school partners too, that they allow us to kind of tweak maybe a little bit and talk about different options with on top of the ideas that they've got, so that we come up with something that is a really workable kind of solution that gives them great bang for their buck, but also great outcomes for the kids in their schools too. But it's also given our therapists, quite a wide range of opportunities and different ways of working, which has been good.
What you guys do incredibly well is stay in touch with the Department of Ed staff, and you know everyone on the ground, well, virtually everyone on the ground, and you know the team leaders and the regional coordinators, and you really stay in really close professional friendships with those guys, so that it is very collaborative based on what I've heard you speak about.
Yeah. And look, I think that's a really important part of it too, because no one service can really cover everything off. So what the schools are doing and what they need to be doing really efficiently is using all of their resources as best as they can. We've also got to be, careful that we're servicing in the right way for these kids too. In some of our schools, we kind of have kids running, maybe rolling through our program to work on a particular set of goals or on a particular area, and then they'll roll off our program into the Department of Ed's list or engagement process there, so that the kids are actually getting, a good portion of the year being covered, but each service by itself wouldn't actually cover them. So it's kind of, it produces nice continuity. And I think you need to have good relationships with the Department of Education staff to actually get that going. Because if you don't, things tend to, get missed or it get doesn't
stuck.
Roll. So
yeah, get stuck.
Yeah. So, and that doesn't benefit the aims as to why we're there to start with.
Absolutely. Do you guys do much in-servicing and kind of co-learning with teachers and classroom assistants?
Or
do you plan to?
We already do. Yeah, I'm always planning the next thing. We do a bit. It's kind of, we probably average maybe three or probably one or two at each school, but maybe as up to, maybe three or four at some of our schools too. So we do a lot of stuff around, again, it's very much around what the school's priorities are. So one of my school contracts, where I was working in a school and they're doing a whole thing on oral language and the development into phonemic awareness. So I did a whole series of about five PDs kind of spaced out over a couple of terms just to kind of facilitate what the school was doing development-wise in that area. So kind of having a bit of a two-pronged attack about their knowledge, their in-house stuff as well as my stuff. We do a lot of in-servicing around social thinking and supporting classes in implementing that, not just for targeted kids, but as a whole class or a whole year level kind of approach. And Margot, my business partner, she actually does it as a whole school approach at one of the schools. So she started working with the school about 4 or 5 years ago. So those kids are in, grade 5 and 6 now. So she's kind of crossed the whole school with that kind of approach.
Yeah, absolutely remarkable. I know exactly the school you're talking about, and I have the luxury of wandering in and out of there from time to time. And it's a real organisational culture of social thinking there. It's quite remarkable. It starts from the front door and the principal and all the way through. It's amazing. It's really gorgeous to see. I wish I kind of knew a bit more about that. See, this is what happens. I get started talking with you and then I think of all these other clinical things that I want to bounce off and do, and I, get distracted. So if we just move back to your work in schools and then maybe bring us up to speed with how you kind of got out of, escaped that kind of paid salary work, and how your private practice trip started, because I know it's changed and you can talk about that as well. But what was that transition in those early days? Can you even remember them?
I can remember them. It was, I look back on them now kind of with a little bit of shock as to how it all kind of happened. So for me, my journey was really haphazard, I have to say. I had a baby and that kind of changed everything up. And in the back of my mind, I always thought that I would start private practice someday, but definitely after that first year of maternity leave, where I really discovered that I wasn't great at just staying at home, and it didn't suit me terribly well. that I needed something more, I thought, oh, I might just start a little bit of private practice on the side, just a day a week and see how it goes. Anyway, it went really well. And I think I've been in catch-up mode ever since. been trying to rein it in ever since. So I kind of started off, I just sent out some flyers, literally, and my office was in my home, and I never really intended to ever practice at home, and I never have. And then, but I wasn't really sure where I was going to do this practice. It was just something that I was sending out interest, and then I was going to figure that out as it came. And through my mail out, I was approached by a psychological firm that had a spare room for free for rent, and they approached to see whether I would like to rent it. And I did, and it kind of snowballed from there. So when I was having my second child 18 months later, I actually needed to employ someone to take over my caseload, because I didn't really think about that as to how private practice doesn't provide maternity leave.
Yeah, or holiday leave or sick leave or
any of that. So I kind of think back now to where we are down the track and kind of in a little bit of horror and surprise, I think, a little bit about how it started. But it really just snowballed from there. And I, 4 years, oh, not even 4 years later, maybe 4 years later, just trying to think now of my dates. Is that terrible? Maybe only 2 or 3 years later, I actually merged my very busy growing practice, which had two staff members and myself, into with another private practice. And since then, we've doubled again and continued. So it's been a fast journey, but yeah. Strap on.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So give us an overview of Peninsula Speech Pathology Services. I so have to concentrate when I say that, because I don't want to miss or muddle up the words, hence the the hesitation. So what's it looking like at the moment? I know it's awesome and incredible.
It's changing. It's a changing private practice face-wise. We've just gone through a year of change. 2016 was our major year of change for us. We've got obviously a high proportion of female staff. In fact, we're all female. I shouldn't go high proportion. We're all female. And we've got a lot of people having babies. So we had 3 babies
what
last year.
What is going on the Mornington Peninsula? We don't want to know.
So we've had a lot of staff changes. So that's been something to manage and something to, you know, get our heads across. Even though we knew it was coming, we probably had a couple of people who didn't have babies that also made some different choices, or their life changed a little bit for them last year and made some different choices. So for us, it was a major year of change and lots of things to be managed. Penn Speech has 15 employees, and it's big. We've got lots of speeches to timetable. We've got a mixture of in-clinic services, home services, school services, and some kinder services and nursing home services. So our timetabling looks quite colourful. We also have a mixture of employed staff and subcontractor staff too. So it's big. But we've really got a nice vibe about it, and that's something that we're really working hard on at the moment, particularly with our new staff coming in, that we want that really nice, it's a great place. I think it's a great place to work. It's a happy place to work. So
it does have a great vibe from the moment you walk in the door. It's, yeah, good vibe. What do you think the success factors are for that positive organisational culture? What are you doing? What's the secret sauce?
Look, I think it's a little bit about leadership team. I think it's about how we react. It's about, or not react, but how we present. I think we've been, even in the last 5 years, we've been really working on our message about what we're about, what we, as in Margot and I, what we want the practice to be about and what we want it to feel about. Because Margot and I have lived on the peninsula for a long time, and we are reasonably well known down here, and we don't want it to be the Megan and Margot show. So we've had to work very hard about communicating what our, you know, what we want, what our business is about to our staff. And I think that's something that, you know, we work very hard on, but I think it's something that we are having some success on. So it's about you know, building our vibe is about it's a safe place, well, not a safe place, but a place for families to come and achieve what they want to achieve. And we do that not only through providing good speech pathology services, but building really great relationships with our families. I was in the supermarket only two nights ago, and one of my little chappies is now in year 10, which is making me feel a little old. But that mum, we stopped and we chatted, and I love that aspect of it, that they, you know, come back, and I get often get emails from families too about how well their kids are doing now. So I love that they include us as part of that family team.
Good. I like that as well. I'm really comfy with meeting people down the street and all the rest of it, and I enjoy the happy ever after piece as well, what these guys do with their lives and what the families achieve around their kids. I think that's amazing stuff to be able to reconnect with.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm reflecting now that I may have gone off on a bit of a tangent there, Kathy.
Right. Tangent is something that we both do particularly well. Very we proud do. Of our tangential thinking. It ends up in all sorts of places, but it's all good. So what are you most proud of?
Do you know what? I'm most proud, I think probably of my team, even though it's a changing team. I love the team that we've built and the relationships that we've built. In our community, we work really well with other private practices here to provide that kind of, you know, multidisciplinary kind of team. So I guess some of my big proud moments, I love our Friday night monthly meetings. I love our rooms. I love the look of the rooms. We designed our rooms specifically for that look of, you know, open, wide hallways, high handles so that kids can't escape. But we love our rooms. We love the way that they look. I have to say it's our team and our approach, because that's something that we've worked really hard off so about, and I'm really pleased with the outcomes there.
Yeah, absolutely. As an observer, I would add to your, as president of your cheer squad, I would add your clinical excellence as well, because you anticipating trends, you're happy to do it, and you're curious about doing it a little bit differently and doing it better and measuring outcomes. And I guess this is leading into a curved ball I'm going to throw you about the NDIA. So if we're not talking about the education department, Megan and I are chewing bacon over the NDIA, and Megan's area rolls out the middle of 2018, I think, yeah?
Yeah, it's April 2018. However, we are hoping to roll out in June this year, because we're going to try and jump on the early intervention rollout, which is not widely advertised. So we are right in the middle of the NDIA registration right now, and it's tricky. It's a little challenging.
What do you think it's going to look like? What difference do you anticipate it will make to Peninsula Speech Pathology Services?
Look, I think we've got some really amazing opportunities coming up, and I'm kind of really excited about that. I think that for some of our clients, particularly the ones who are not in that early intervention space, it's going to offer them up some more choices and some more opportunities that they may not have actually been able to access before. I think for those the early intervention ones, it's going to give them more choice about what they want, and more priorities around what they want and when they want it too. So I think it's going to open up. It's just going to give lots of people lots of choice. I think we're also, with the older kids, for us, we're going to see a lot more people looking for communication devices and things like that, which we haven't had so much on the peninsula before. I think our social skills groups are going to continue to blossom, and I think that's going to be key for a lot of people. We're talking about some kind of different service delivery kind of things around this too, trying to again be a little bit more innovative and looking at some more community kind of based stuff, because particularly with our teenagers, we're actually looking at not having our social skills groups in the clinic anymore. We're looking at, for that older age range, we're looking at going a little bit further afield. So it's going to change it way we do a few things.
Oh, wow. That's amazing to hear. And, you know, something we've spoken about is the concept and how as business owners, our conceptual thinking has to change, and we need to be really customer obsessed and really thinking about not so much what we want to do, but what our customers need or may need in the future and building products around that. So to get down and dirty with those teens and order some pizzas and meet them off site and do those sorts of things in their real environments, I think, yeah, you could be onto something really, really relevant. Really relevant.
Yeah. The other thing too that we're kind of exploring a little bit too, which I think is really exciting, we've been meeting with some community groups too about, particularly with some of our ASD kids, where they're, you know, trying to make some more connections in the community, but maybe not having such success. So we're looking at exploring some relationships there just to make sure that those kids can access those community groups with a greater degree of success. So again, not in the clinic, getting out of the clinic and mixing with some other people. Yeah.
Sounds very, very cool. Exciting. So with you kind of in innovation mode, I'm hearing innovation mode, Megan, in between the lines here. I know that innovation means that you've got to build new products, but you've also got to market new products. And you do this really, really well. You are one of the...
I'm laughing.
You know what the question's going to be?
Yes, I do.
It's going to be the social media question.
Yes,
so for people listening along, it's not unusual for me to get a screenshot or an SMS saying, oh my gosh, 50 likes on this post, or oh my gosh, it's, you know, 500 posts on this one. And so, Megan, you are amazing on social media. Let me say it out loud. And I'm really interested about the value you think it brings to the practice.
Well, that wasn't the question I thought I was going to get, but that's okay. I think, look, social media, it's a funny thing. It's a necessary thing. It's very much a necessary thing for business today, because all of our clients, our current clients, our future clients, that's where they're interacting, that's where they are. So it's really important to be there, and I think posting relevant stuff and all of those things. But I do not always get it right. That's why you get those texts when I'm surprised and gobsmacked.
Yeah, there have
about
been some
how
fails.
There's absolutely been some fails. And I have to say, even though it's something that I dedicate a slot of my time on a Monday morning to, and I will continue to do that because I do feel that it is a necessary part of business these days. It's not something that I always get right, and I'm often shocked and amazed. I shouldn't be shocked and amazed when a post goes well. I should know that it went well, was going to go well. But I do find it can be a bit all over the place, but definitely necessary. You've got to have a good mix, though, too. That's the other thing I'll say. And sometimes I don't always have a good mix, so something I'm working still
on. Yeah, it's hard to get the mix right because you don't want it to be too salesy and about what you're doing. However, when you're in innovation and new product and marketing mode, you also need to kind of share up what you're doing, and from a very outcomes point of view as well. So you guys have rocked out videos done by each of your staff members. Do you remember doing that?
I do remember that. We've got some more planned for this year too, which is exciting. And look, I have to say, they weren't hard to do. We literally did those ourselves in the back room with a camera and did a little bit of editing on them as well. So I think it's good. We're going to use video a lot more, actually. We're going to look at some, I think they call them vlogs this year, video blogs.
My gosh, listen to those words
terminology
coming out of your mouth.
So we're going to do some of those this year. Just, I think too, we're living in an age of where vision and being able to see everything is so important. So you've got to also make ourselves and our clinics kind of visible online so that people can see what they're coming to, see who they're coming to, and get a little bit of an idea about who they're coming to see and what we're about before they get there. And I think that means that when they get there, they feel really comfortable straight away because they kind of feel like they've already met us. So I think that was some of the ideas about the videoing and the videoing of the clinics and things like that. So yeah, we've got some more things planned. And they do tend to go very well too.
Get the lipstick on. All good.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of one of the most powerful things about social media is people can kind of hear your voice and see you and get your take on things, so that there is a familiar, they feel quite comfortable and familiar when they actually pick up the phone. So let's just go down a rabbit hole just for a quick little two minutes. If you have a think about what is in your social media feed on Facebook, let's just take Facebook, because
yep.
I know you're on all of the other bits. What would we see across 2 weeks? What kind of content would you be dropping in?
So the most recent 2 weeks are not a good example because we've been on school holidays, but I try to have a blog up once a week. We haven't had a blog up for the last 4 weeks. Just on the side, but I try and get a blog up once a week. I try and advertise one of our groups, and then I have my other days kind of set days. So we also have an adult caseload. So Wednesday is always about something adult related. And then the other days I kind of fill in with really relevant kind of information that I feel that people want to know about. So thinking about our caseload a little bit, I might find something about autism or Down syndrome or language development. So I kind of try and rotate some of that information. I keep an eye on that I'm not posting too much in any one area, but I need to have that kind of mix. I think the best mix is when it's a little bit of content from us, a little bit of content gleaned from the web, and a little bit of kind of advertising stuff about what we're doing within the practice as well. So we try and mix it up. And then some days we actually, on the weekends, I don't always do this, but on the weekends, I like to have like Saturday's funnies or funny memes or something just to lighten it up a little bit as well. So
I might add, I sit there and do some of your competitions and some of your find six things in the photo. I sit there and turn it all sideways and have a bit of a look. Are you using the Facebook scheduling function or are you using other scheduling software?
Oh, this is a marvelous question because I've just signed up for somebody else too. I have used quite a number of different scheduling things. I'm back to just using Facebook. I've just moved one of my pages over to Facebook Business. And I'm giving that a bit of a go. I signed up for another one the other day, but I have to say I haven't started yet because it looks too complicated for me. But yeah, look, I've tried a lot of them and I have to say I actually find the easiest way is to just do it through Facebook, which is a bit sad at the end of the day. The other thing though, I only post once a day. I don't do any more than once a day. So if you're posting two or three times a day, I think one of those schedulers would be really, really great. But for me, I find straight Facebook better at the moment.
Have you looked at Meeting Edgar?
I have looked. I've joined up to Meeting Edgar. A little bit pricier than some of the other ones.
It's good though.
Yeah, it's good. But I did have a trial on that. I had a long trial on, I'm just trying to remember what it was called. Oh, tell me another one, Kathy. What's another really popular? Hootsuite.
Buffer? Hootsuite and Buffer are popular.
I used Hootsuite for a while, but I found there were some errors in that not always my attachments or my click-throughs went through. And then I was quite embarrassed. I'd have a post up with a click-through and it wouldn't click through and I'd have to go back in and fix it.
We've all done that.
So I was a bit frustrated. When I'm posting straight away, it often works better. So
yeah, you're quite an early adopter of software and tech and all things that sort of plug in and be useful. What are you using practice management software wise?
So practice management wise, we actually use a product called My Practice, and it's not a super popular one out there in the marketplace. It is a paid one, so there is a subscription fee for it. And we moved over to My Practice because we needed to go paperless about 3 or 4 years ago. At the time, I was still really nervous about iCloud storage and all of those kind of things. So we made a massive investment and actually bought a server and all the things that go with that. And we actually host My Practice out ourselves. So we love it in that it does all of our appointments. It does all of our invoicing. It stores all of our paperwork. So all of our clients' notes, we type their notes in. It also files away all of their reports, all of their communication with GPs. It has templates on it that our admin staff use. You can also not record telephone calls, but record the time that you're on the call and the notes that you made while you're on the call. So it has a lot of features that we really love. It sends out SMSs to our clients to remind them about their appointments. So it's quite a inclusive. We like to have everything in one place. And it also shoots out a financial report straight out to it's a nice all-in-one service that kind of really does suit us.
Does it talk to MailChimp and Xero?
It talks to MailChimp. It doesn't talk to Xero. It talks to Myob. So when we bought my practice, we had Myob and we have since moved to Xero. So there may be an update maybe down the track. That's something that I haven't asked for, but maybe I could. But yeah. But look, it's been a real, we love it. We're very much committed to it and staying with it.
It's one of the systems I know the least about. So next time I'm being decorative in your waiting room,
yes,
I might take a glance, because you're very thorough in your investigations and decision making. So yeah, I might have a little snoop.
Check it out. Very cool.
Tell me about how paperless you really are.
Not as much as I was hoping at the start, but we are pretty paperless. So we, all of our notes obviously don't go on paper, they go straight into the system. My practice actually has in it, we all use it to varying degrees, but case history, assessments, all of that kind of stuff can be, it's got its own section for speech pathologists, so it can be entered in straight away. All of our reports, which we obviously type up on our computers, are PDF'd and uploaded, so no paper there. All of our communications with schools, again, PDF and uploaded. So we don't produce, in clinical services, we don't produce a lot of paper. We're still obviously producing paper for therapy and things like that. We're still producing a little bit of paper just to maintain our accountability and everything around some of our financials. We still print off, actually probably that area of the admin area is still where we are still using a bit of paper. The other thing that we've tried to do with varying degrees of success is the other side of it too. So when we're seeing somebody for the first time, or when they make a booking with us for the first time, we were actually sending out a case history form and our client agreement and all of that on paper via post.
Wow.
Only to have them bring back in for us to scan it onto the system and then shred it. So we've now had all of our forms converted into editable PDFs, and that now gets emailed out.
That is the best hack ever.
Absolutely. I was surprised it took us so long.
I suggested that, but it probably wasn't.
You did suggest it. No, it did. It came from you. It was something that you said, and I was like, oh, we could do that. So, so it absolutely was something that you suggested. So the problems that we're having with that, though, still a little bit, is that, A, not always do people check their emails. So they make their appointment and it's almost like they've ticked that off their box and they don't remember to look for the email. And I think we've had to change our email addresses a little bit as to where they're sent from, because info@peninsulaspeech.com tends to go into junk mail a lot. So we've had to create some different ones to send those ones out so it doesn't junk. But yeah, so we still have clients that come in without that documentation and we still have to print it.
Yeah.
So
but never mind.
It's a work in progress.
Absolutely. 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 And you are very quick and responsive and you're kind of keen for the next thing. So yeah, good on you. Good on you. There'll be a solution in there somewhere.
Somewhere.
So what are you guys doing? What are you doing really, really well at the moment?
I'm going to say team again. I know it's almost like I'm harping on this, but this is where we're putting a lot of our energy in our team and our development of our team, because we see so much value in our staff and because that's us. That's the kind of what we're putting forward out to them. I'm really proud of a few programs that we're running that we've been in development. So some around our social skills programming and the work that we're doing in schools with that, but also the work that we're doing in the clinic with that. We've produced a new program that's really exciting called the Superflex Academy, which is based on Michelle Garcia Winner's Superflex program. So that's something else that I'm pretty proud of at the moment. That's up and running and working really well. So they're my ticks at the moment.
Yeah, understandable. So something that I'm trying to kind of relive, because I never ever managed this when I had the business, was lunchtime. I just never seem to have a proper lunch break. So in the series of this podcast, I'm going to be asking business owners about what happens at lunchtime in your office.
Well, for me or for everyone?
Well, let's do you first, then everybody
else. Let's do me first. So I'm frantically probably trying to grab lunch and return phone calls and do 1,000 things at once, catch up with somebody. Sometimes I actually have some working lunches in that I sometimes carry a bit of mentoring as well. And often with my schedule, that has to be kind of fitted in lunchtime. So sometimes I'm sitting in somebody else's room and we're chatting and going through that process. This is a really interesting one because when we rebuilt this clinic that I'm so proud of, the one thing that I didn't get on my wish list was a staff room. So I sacrificed the staff room for a bigger group room. And while I don't go back on my decision, it has meant that we haven't got a proper staff room. And while we've got stools and a bench and all of those kind of things, and there is congregation down there where people kind of naturally do kind of meet, we don't meet there for a long time. So there is a bit of chat, that nice chat that happens over lunch down there, but it's not for long. So, but my lunchtime is very rarely me pleading mindful eating, where I'm only thinking about what I'm eating and chewing. I'm often eating on the run still, or eating while I'm doing something else. So
yeah, I'm anticipating that is going to be a pretty defaulter for private practitioners. Private practitioners. I know when I was kind of, on the tool still, I would be eating in the car day after day, week after week, all the rest of it.
I was reviewing my yearly goals the other day, and I was talking to somebody about, diet and exercise and all of this. And she said, one thing that you must do is eat in a mindful way. And I was reflecting and I thought, well, that's something that's probably not going to happen. So
maybe next time we have breakfast, we can not talk about work and eat in a mindful way.
Talk about work.
At least tick it off for a couple of times a year. What's your management clinical load percentage shuffle juggle like at the moment? Or what do you want it? What's it like now? What do you want it to be?
Well, it's changing a little bit this year. So I'm clinically connected 3 days, and I'm going to be working on the business 2 days. Well, maybe 1.5 days actually, but that's a bit of a change. I'm trying to drag things a little bit back because on my clinical days, I often saw clients during the day and managed the business during the day, and I ended up writing all my notes at night. And that's something I'm really keen to get away from. So I'm quite excited about having more time just dedicated to working on the business rather than trying to jam it into everything else. I think it's something that's made me a really good scheduler. I can schedule anything really well, but I'd like to not jam so much into each day and just have a bit more separation. So it's hard to do, though. It's incredibly hard to do. It's taken me this long to do it.
And I guess you have to kind of be prepared for flow and change and, and have that balance. A balance is a dynamic thing. It's never actually static. Mm. And so you've got to have a tolerance for change and flux with that.
And I think, too, it's going to be for me just to even think about the different change of the way I go about doing things. And because those management decisions aren't always going to wait till my Monday or my Friday.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to still happen during Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday. So it's going to be an interesting change for me, but one I'm really quite excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. Where do you get your management mojo from? Do you have favourite books or websites or people to talk to or things to listen to?
It was interesting. I was I did a little bit of thinking about this before we got on this call, because that's what I do.
If anyone is going to be over-prepared, meet my friend Megan Ingram.
I was kind of thinking, and look, I've picked up books. I've read, we engaged a business coach a few years ago, and he gave me The E-Myth, and I've read bits and pieces of that. I've looked at bits and pieces of different websites. I read bits and pieces of bits that I get off Facebook, but I'm not dedicated to any one site or any one book or anything. So I guess I'm fairly eclectic in what I take on. I talk to Kathy a lot, glean lots of ideas from you and from other people too. So I really don't have one love of one book or one website or anything like that. So I guess I've been fairly eclectic. I think too, when I started this journey, I was a speech pathologist taking money and trying to run a business. And it's probably only been in the last 5 years that that's really all changed for me. And probably around the time that we saw the need to get the business coach, actually, that I'm still a speech pathologist that works, but there's this other side of me that I've kind of developed along the way too. So, and maybe on an ad needs basis, if I find a problem that I can't solve, I go and find a solution too.
Yeah. And I guess if we look down the barrel of the next 5 years, we don't even know what our next challenges and problems are going to be, and let alone what flavor the solutions are going to be. So I think a really open, curious, flexible mind is the management mindset to have for the next little while.
I think also having really good relationships with key people like your accountant and people like that, and maintaining we still occasionally chat to our business coach as well, not on a routinely regular basis, but just snatches. So I think having those kind of key people around you is really important, and have been really important for me, just to kind of, you know, they're there when I need them and I can engage and find out what I need to know.
I just have to totally agree. You are so right. It is really important. And when I was building my business, I had a team of advisors, and I worked with two different business coaches at different times for completely different reasons. But they were both, you know, difficult, challenging times where I really needed someone else's external perspective on it. And I had a team of advisors, and I would haul them in and bring them around the table and do the what if and the Q&A, and there were tears, fair to say, there have been tears. And to have that sounding board and to also have some accountability, I just found invaluable, absolutely invaluable.
And you need that, you need to know who your trusted people are, so that when that time comes about, you need to know where you're going to go, who you're going to talk to.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to find those people when it's a bit dark and gloomy and overwhelming. So I'm good to front foot some of that stuff. Alrighty, so at the risk of not kind of sitting here for the next hour and a half, as I know we very easily could, I'm offering all of my podcast guests the chance to ask me a question. And as I ask you this, my eyes are shooting up to the ceiling because I have no idea what you would like to ask me. Is there anything that you want to ask me?
Oh, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Just trying to think quickly what it could be. So, I'm really on the spot now. So what's your next direction? Which way are you going for the next 12 months or so? Which way are you leaning? Is it going to be business coaching? Is it going to be?
Yeah, it is. It is.
It is?
It is. So for those that are listening, it's early 2017, and I feel that for 2017, I am the most organized and forward thinking that I have been for virtually any other year. So I largely had my calendar sorted in December, and it's often something I leave to January, February, but I really front footed it. So I know when I'm on leave, I know when I'm traveling, I know when the conference is in June, the two-day conference in June, blatant plug. I know when I've got different workshops and web events. And so although they may change, absolutely, I really am, throwing everything I've got at the private practice coaching space because I love it. And the experience I've got is somewhat unique, having spent 20 years self-employed running a business and selling it. So that's my plan.
And I think
go hard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think too, it's something that is so needed out there at the moment, because there are a lot of us, I mean, with the NDIS and NDIS starting, there's so many of us starting in private practice, and there's so many new opportunities and businesses growing that it's not as easy as just that. You need somebody with that experience and that guidance to kind of help you along that journey.
Absolutely. And I guess I think what's important to me is being able to make the management life of private practitioners a little bit easier and a little bit more vibrant and a little bit more joyful, and kind of patching in those bits that you need around clinical excellence to really make a business hum. And when a business is humming and flowing beautifully, you have happy business owners, you have happy team, and but you also have happy, happy families and great outcomes for kids. And I've said this on other podcasts that, you know, we can kind of work to get this multi-layered impact and multi-layered positive outcome. And, oh, that stuff. I reckon that stuff's cool.
That's very cool. Very cool.
So I guess in the interest of blatant self-promotion, we probably should very quickly in 2 minutes talk about Team Talk, because this is a product that we have absolutely adored cobbling together, and it has taken previously mentioned kilos of bacon and liters of coffee. So Team Talk is a product that we run. It's a one-hour teleconference. It's on the first Tuesday of the month, and it's about all of the clinical topics that clinicians should be and are talking about around the meeting table. And it's cheap and cheerful, and there's no travel and accommodation. You get some notes, questions, and really interesting web links. And we enjoy it. And we're back up for 2017.
I love it. It's fantastic. I think it's nice and bite-sized, and there's some great discussion on the call too, and lots of expert chatters. Kathy and I do our share, but there's lots of contributions from others too. So fantastic, PD, and a bargain price.
Absolutely. So Team Talk, you'll find all the details for it on social media. So we both promote it, and we get really excited about all the people that are looking at it. So it's on Naker Consulting Facebook page. What Facebook page is it on?
It's actually on, it's on at my Speech Concepts Facebook page for me.
And it's on the naker.com.au website as well. So, yeah, we would love to hear you in that space as well. So, blatant promotion, self-promotion over and out. Megan, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Do you want to perhaps just give us a little bit of a link to your social media pages, your website, so forth, just to complete the call out?
So Peninsula Speech Pathology's website is peninsulaspeech.com.au, and there you'll find our smiling faces and some of our blogs and programs that we're running. On Facebook, Peninsula Speech Pathology Services, that's our Facebook page, and we're also on Twitter as well. I also have another business called Speech Concepts, where I make resources for speech pathologists, which are for sale on Teachers Pay Teachers. So you can find me there on speechconcepts.com.au, on Facebook as Speech Concepts, and Instagram and Pinterest, which is my new love. So as Speech Concepts as well. So on all of the things.
Well done. Well done. Oh, I'm going to go and have a look at Pinterest now. That is all good news. Thank you so much for joining us. I know we said it was going to be 30 minutes, so sorry, listeners. You've got so much more than you anticipated, so much more than you signed up for. I can't even imagine what we would possibly edit out, so we may have a couple of long podcasts in this series. Thank you, Megan. Have a wonderful, wonderful afternoon. And in the show notes, we'll put links to your websites and all your good stuff. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Big thanks for investing your time right through to the end of this episode of Private Practice Secrets. We hope you enjoyed this episode and all the other strong private practice stories in this, our very first season of Private Practice Secrets. If you're keen for some more private practice business info, we sure can help you out. Head on over to the nakerconsulting.com.au website, and you'll find all sorts of bits and pieces there. Blogs, forms, web events, freebies, conferences, and more. I'll spell that for you, nacre.com.au. Yeah, a weird name with a really, really cool story. While you're on the website, you are warmly invited to book in for a free 30-minute power coaching session. I really look forward to hearing a bit more about you and your business. And yes, you have full permission to pick my brains. Thanks for listening. I'm Kathy Love, Allied Health Business Coach, and I'm wishing you and your business a brilliant day.